This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on the show today, the worldwide battle against Duchenne muscular dystrophy. We'll talk with the local woman behind the effort. First, there's been a big increase in the number of HIV cases in Cincinnati and northern Kentucky. Local health officials say it's the result of the region's heroin crisis as drug users share needles contaminated with the virus. That's why many health experts are advocating for needle exchange programs. Joining us to discuss the increase in HIV in the region are Northern Kentucky Health Department District Director of Health, Dr. Lynn Sadler. Dr. Sadler, good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Family Health Division Director with the Cincinnati Health Department, Dr. Jennifer Mooney. And Dr. Mooney, thank you for being here today.
Pleasure
good
to
afternoon.
Be here. Thanks.
And also Hamilton County Public Health Commissioner Tim Ingram. And Commissioner Ingram, good day. Thank you for being here as well.
Good afternoon.
You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So what are each of you seeing in your departments in terms of the HIV increase in 2017? Dr. Sadler, what happened in Northern Kentucky?
Well, in public health, we're always monitoring infectious diseases, of which HIV is one of them. And what we saw in 2017 was not only were our total number of cases increasing, we were seeing a very concerning shift in the risk factors for the people who were infected. And that shift was occurring where we were seeing more people reporting a history of injection drug use as their risk factor for contracting HIV.
So what did the numbers look like? How much of an increase was there?
So in 2017, we saw a 3 to 4-fold increase in the number of people diagnosed with HIV who said they had the risk factor of injection drug use.
And Commissioner Ingram in Hamilton County, what did you see in terms of the HIV increase?
Yeah, we saw an increase in the number of new cases in 2017 when we compare it with 2016 information. And so we saw a 34% increase in the number of new cases of HIV. And we also look at the same risk factors that Northern Kentucky and Dr. Sadler look at relative to where are the groups that are seeing the largest increase. And again, we saw a 2-fold increase in the number of HIV cases attributed to intravenous drug use.
And Dr. Mooney in the city of Cincinnati, similar numbers
there?
It is
similar. I would say that the concentration may look a little different. We did see the number of cases increase just over 40% higher than the number in 2016. And then those that fell into the risk group of injection drug use increased nearly 2.5 times.
Did any of you notice this was affecting younger members of the population?
Our increase was in what I would consider younger people in that 20 to 29 age group.
Yeah, so when you're comparing again, we're comparing it against 2016 data in Hamilton County in the ages of 15 to 34-year-olds. More than 63% of the cases were in the injectable or drug use category.
Mm-hmm. Younger people as well, Dr. Mooney?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct.
Now, how much is this concern is there that this could actually be the numbers could be greater than what you're seeing? Does a lot of this go underreported, unreported, Dr. Sadler?
Yes. You know, nationally, the CDC tells us that many people do not know their status. They don't know they're infected. And I strongly suspect that as we do our more intensive investigation of the cases that we know about, and we do an expanded targeted outreach to this population, we're going to find significantly more cases of HIV.
Mm-hmm. Any similar concerns, Commissioner?
No, I would agree. Anytime we begin to raise awareness and begin to intensify our services relative to trying to find cases, we generally find more cases.
Is there a widespread community risk for HIV based on what you've seen in the increase in the HIV numbers?
Well, I think you have to remember the risk factors involved. If you look at the three main categories of folks that are spreading HIV, the biggest risk factor is actually men having sex with men, followed with high risk heterosexual behavior, and then the largest increase we've seen year over year has been in the intravenous drug use data. We haven't seen that much increase in the number of HIV cases among the men having sex with men. We have seen an increase in the category of high-risk heterosexual behavior. These are folks that perhaps could be selling their bodies for opioids, for drugs. That's concerning too, but the biggest increase has been in the injectable drug use category.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join our discussion. Dr. Sadler, is there ongoing testing and ongoing surveying continuing on this? I mean, are you working in conjunction with CDC to look into these numbers more?
Yes. Yeah, so for the cases that we know about from 2017, we will be doing an expanded questioning of the cases to gather more information, get a better understanding of the situation, and we will also be asking to be able to obtain blood samples that we can send to the CDC, where they can do genetic sequencing and help us understand if we're dealing with the same or similar strain of HIV in our community, or is it are there different strains circulating in our community?
How much of a concern is it that a cluster of heroin-related HIV cases could turn into a full outbreak like what happened in Scott County, Indiana, several years ago? I believe it was 2014 and 2015.
You know, the potential is certainly there, and as we go through this more in-depth investigation and really start looking for more cases, you know, the potential is there. We're not there at this point, and hopefully we're not going to get there, but we really have to learn more about the situation that we're dealing with and the cluster of cases that we've got.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Ingram, your thoughts on that?
Well, I would agree with Dr. Sadler. There's always that potential, but there is one big difference between the Scotts County, Indiana outbreak of HIV to intravenous drug use and what we're starting to see arise here. Is that we already have prevention programs in place that we're already have operationalized, and we're looking to expand. I'd like to refer those as the Bloodborne Infection Prevention Program. It's where people can come on to a mobile unit, and they can be counseled and educated about the risk factors. They can exchange their equipment. They can be tested for HIV and hepatitis C, and they can have pregnancy testing as well as a referral into treatment. We have those programs already operational here inside Hamilton County and the city, and we're looking to add some more sites.
Dr. Mooney, HIV is not considered the death sentence it once was, but still, if it's left untreated, it can be a serious thing. It can transform into AIDS, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. I think another thing that both commissioners are also discussing is the potential for community harm. It's not necessarily that these prevention programs protect current, for example, drug users. But what it does is it basically saves us from having 40,000 syringes left on park benches and buses, thrown away in garbage cans, in grassy spaces where children play. So the potential risk to the community is very great. Yes, we want to protect all people, but these programs that Commissioner Ingram are talking about also basically introduce a system of accountability. And we have found that time and time again, drug users are using that system of accountability, and they're using it with caution, and they're using it on a weekly basis. And it's really because they want to protect their communities.
How many components are you talking about in this particular program? I mean, people typically think of needle exchanges, syringe exchanges, but this how far beyond that does this go?
Well, this is a comprehensive program. Obviously, equipment exchange, taking dirty needles off the street, out of garbage cans where safety workers can encounter them and so forth, as Dr. Mooney said, are very important. But we're looking at doing screenings for HIV and hepatitis C. We want to find those cases and get people referred into the proper treatment. We want to make sure that we are an ally. We are there to help them. We are meeting them where they are today. We want to get, if they're ready to get into treatment, we've got access to treatment for them. We're providing them Narcan. We want them to stay alive. We're in a naloxone. We want them to stay alive until until they can get into treatment and get this disease of addiction into remission.
What do you say? Some people might say this is enabling their drug use. How do you respond to that?
They're already using these drugs, okay? They're already sick. It's a disease. We can't continue to be in this state of denial because the fact that there's programs that have been operating across this country where they have provided lots of data, Baltimore, Seattle, just to name two. When they have had these programs in place in their community, they've seen huge reduction in the number of dirty needles that are out there for children and safety workers to encounter and then have to go through all that testing. We have to look at this problem of opiate use as a disease of the brain.
I would also add that if you're talking to any person out in the community, you ask any baby boomer, anyone who has been to a rock concert, ask former smokers, did you quit on the very first time you tried? How many times did it take you to quit smoking cigarettes? And then try to place yourself in a space where the ramifications of going through withdrawal are so physically impossible to endure. People make up their minds on their own pace. We can't tell people when they should be ready. So this provides an avenue for people to stay safe, have access to resources, and when they're ready for treatment, we're there to do the warm handoff.
Dr. Sadler, what about in Northern Kentucky? I mean, how comprehensive is what you're doing down there?
In many respects, it's similar to what Tim has talked about here on this side of the river. We have one operational syringe access exchange program out of our Grant County Health Center in Williamstown, and we provide all the comprehensive services that Tim mentioned, the access to Narcan, the testing for HIV and hepatitis C. One of the advantages of operating out of a healthcare facility is that we have nurses and nurse practitioners on site who can also provide additional services that people may need. And we also have the space for one of our community partners to have a substance abuse counselor on site so that our ability to do the warm handoff for treatment for addiction is much easier in the facility that we're in. But the services, as Tim said, are comprehensive. You know, the sterile injection equipment is really just what may attract people to come in the door, but when they're able to access a wide range of medical services, it's a good thing for them. It's a good thing for our community.
So treatment goes hand in hand with the exchange program.
It does. Being able to talk to a counselor, and if they're ready to and choosing to go into treatment, to be able to make that happen right then and there at the program.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to discuss the increase in HIV in the region and efforts to counter it, our Northern Kentucky Health Department District Director of Health, Dr. Lynn Sadler, Family Health Division Director with the Cincinnati Health Department, Dr. Jennifer Mooney, and Hamilton County Public Health Commissioner Tim Ingram. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dr. Sadler, where does the law stand if someone who's using drugs tests positive for HIV but insists on sharing needles? Is there anything that can be done about it?
You know, that's a real challenge, and obviously the legal aspects of things isn't my area of expertise. But, you know, oftentimes, and I think Tim alluded to this, when folks come to the syringe access exchange program or if we're testing them, we have a number of services that we can offer people to be able to access treatment and have that covered and the medications for HIV, and also receive some assistance through case management. And it's really about building relationships with people and treating them decently, treating them like human beings, and really having a relationship with people so that they trust you and you remove the barriers so that they can make the necessary changes that need to occur.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. So in Northern Kentucky, there's an exchange program in Grant County, and there's one in Pendleton.
Correct. And Pendleton is in a different health jurisdiction, but it's right next door to Grant County. And that's really because of the nature of the law in Kentucky that requires three levels of approval in order to operate a program. You need your Board of Health, which we had right after the law passed, and then you need the approval of the county government and the city government in which you want to operate.
Now, is there a possibility of more needle exchange programs, more syringe exchange programs being added in Northern Kentucky?
If we can get the necessary approvals, we currently have an approval in Kenton County and Covington, but it has a number of conditions, the first of which it hinges on operating in two other counties in our jurisdiction, of which we have one county operational, but we do not have another program operational yet because we don't have all the necessary approvals at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. What about in Hamilton County, Commissioner Ingram? I mean, how many needle exchange programs are in operation?
There are three.
Three, okay.
And they're at in Quarryville, in Northside, and Avondale. And they operate half days. And then we also are traveling our mobile unit up to Middletown at their request and costs, one half day a week. And we're looking to, of course, expand it because we feel that given the data and the concerns we all express here as health officials, we need to increase access. And it's amazing the number of people that are coming on for services.
And Dr. Mooney, why aren't there more exchange programs out there?
I think it takes a lot to get things like this together. You want to do it in a fiscally sound way and a politically smart way. And you have to get the buy-in of the stakeholders. A lot of this epidemic is really kind of hinging on us changing the focus from this being a punitive epidemic and more of a rehabilitative one. So if you think of past drug epidemics, we haven't necessarily handled them in the same way that we're handling this epidemic. It was more of a criminal justice problem. This epidemic is now being housed in public health and with our partners in criminal justice and our first responders. But I would say that it's sort of an attitude adjustment, and it takes a lot of players at the table to make that happen.
513-419-7100, and Robert joins us. Good afternoon, Robert. Hi, Robert. Go right ahead. So I think we're having problems with Robert's call. One more time. Robert, are you there? Okay, so Robert wanted to ask about programs in other countries where people who are addicted have a safe place to use their drugs. They're staffed with medical professionals, so like a supervised situation for them. Is there any talk of anything like that going on here? And that's Robert's question.
No.
Okay.
But there are places in other countries and there's been other cities in this in our country that have had that mm-hmm. discussion.
Is the discussion going on around here, Commissioner Ingram?
No. Not in my realm.
Okay. No.
Okay, Nick joins us now at 513-419-7100. Hi, Nick.
Hi, yes. I was wondering what role PrEP is playing or can play in preventing the transmission of HIV, and how can that be utilized more effectively here in Cincinnati? Because when I've talked to health professionals before about PrEP, they are either completely unaware of its existence or do not recommend it.
Well, Nick, this is Dr. Sadler from Northern Kentucky. It's not Cincinnati, but I agree there's been a slow uptake in the provision of PrEP. We are, on our side of the river, continuing to work with our healthcare system and the physicians in our community, and also looking at how we can incorporate that into the clinical services that we provide out of our health centers as well.
Now, what is PrEP, Dr. Sadler?
It's pre-exposure prophylaxis. It's medication that people who are at serious risk of becoming infected with HIV, it's medication that they can take prior to exposure to prevent the transmission of HIV.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Commissioner Ingram, you were talking about the effective equipment exchange programs and harm reduction programs around the country. So we've got some examples of these working. So I just wanted to ask everybody, how effective are these?
Oh, you know, as Tim said earlier, these programs have been around for decades, and there has been a lot of research on their effectiveness. And they continue to show that they are extremely effective and are very successful, not only at helping to curb the spread of disease, but getting contaminated needles and syringes out of public spaces and helping people get into treatment for addiction. So there is plenty of data and evidence out there for the success of these programs.
Ruth joins us now at 513-419-7100. Hi, Ruth.
Hello, yes. I had asked a question. If there had been an expansion in the availability of treatment in Hamilton County, I know the syringe exchange had just been absorbed by the health department and had previously been run for a little over 2 years by the Cincinnati Exchange Project. And it seems that there still isn't enough treatment opportunity available for people.
Well, that's true, but it has expanded. We have more capacity today than we did in the past, and healthcare systems in our community are responding to this this epidemic of opioid use. There's more work to do, and it's at different levels. Just the waiver program that the feds allowed and the state oversaw to make it easier for more physicians to be able to prescribe medication-assisted treatment has occurred and so forth. I mean, there's more work to do. We don't have enough capacity, but we have more capacity today than we did a year ago.
And what's the biggest obstacle to expanding programs like this?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think it's very multifaceted, and there's cultural change here involved. You got to realize that forever, actually, we have and health have separated pretty much substance use disorders as being a physical malady like diabetes or heart disease, which we're very good at treating and so forth. And so I think this is about almost reconnecting all this and making it more holistic.
Simon joins us. Good afternoon, Simon.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Hello?
Yes, You're on.
Cool. Hi, I'm a resident of Newport, and I wanted to actually address Dr. Sadler. Right now, the mayor and commissioners of Newport are voting in February whether or not to actually approve a syringe exchange program. And I was wondering what the specifics we should be advocating for should actually be. Should it be a mobile exchange? Should it be a fixed location? Compared to the realities of what's going on in Grant County right now, how could we transfer that into Campbell or Kenton County?
Well, from our perspective at the health department, it's true. The elected officials need to hear from their constituents about how they feel about the program. We have a proven track record with our program in Grant County and the success of that program. We would like to be able to replicate that out of our health center, out of all of our health centers, ultimately. If that's not at all possible, and we are only approved to be able to operate out of a mobile unit, obviously we can only do what we are approved to do. However, I think for our community, being able to provide a wider range and more comprehensive access to services would be a good thing, and to have it in a controlled environment. We know from surveying and focus groups with the population of people who inject drugs, they feel very comfortable coming to the health centers. They feel comfortable with public health nurses and getting their services out of our health centers. It will be additional expense, and it will take us longer to get up and running if we have to go the mobile route. But having a program is more important than not having a program. But our preference would be to be able to operate out of our health centers.
And Dr. Sadler, how can community members support the response to this increase in HIV?
I know the elected officials want to hear from residents of the communities that they have jurisdiction over because they're trying to get a sense of if there is support for this and how people feel in general and the direction they think that they need to go. So it's now is the time to make your feelings known, whatever they are, and let them know and help them make an informed decision.
And Dr. Mooney, what would your advice be to community members who want to help?
I would say exactly what Dr. Seiler is suggesting. Use your elected officials for what you can. The city of Cincinnati, we were fortunate to have a champion, Councilmember Seelbach, really pushed this through all the way through council and really kind of turned the page for the city to get some additional funding to support this effort. So I think that if you have you have a captive audience who wants to know what the pros and cons are and, the differences between a brick and mortar and a mobile unit and how you're limited in one function may create capacity in another. So I think it is multifaceted. It's challenging, but they definitely want to know what the realities could be.
You know, everyone has been touched by this problem. And what we don't want to see happen is as people are waiting to get into treatment or are ready for treatment, that they're not picking up these secondary infections of HIV and hepatitis C, because that's a life-changing event too. And if you look at just the treatment cost for HIV alone over the course of the treatment, it's $400,000. If we save one, prevent one case of HIV in Hamilton County, we've just paid for the program for a year. And so just the business case, it makes sense. We don't want to be stupid about this. You know, we have an issue. Everybody knows we have an issue now. It's always being covered. And now we're starting to see some of these secondary infections start. Let's not be stupid about this. Let's do the right thing. We know what to do. There's been places across this, New York City, Baltimore, Miami. I mean, you just named the city, Chicago. They've been running these programs for years. We've learned from their mistakes and their successes. And we are putting the very best programs together. So get involved. Let us not cut our noses off to spite our faces, so to speak.
Well, thanks to all of you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Northern Kentucky Health Department District Director of Health, Dr. Lynn Sadler, Family Health Division Director with the Cincinnati Health Department, Dr. Jennifer Mooney, and Hamilton County Public Health Commissioner, Tim Ingram.